C4. Number 21B.
Then, from the point of truth, we can see that if we grow ourselves, say, into the stature of Christian manhood, as she calls it, into the stature of having a Christ consciousness, and we have a consciousness of love and mind, namely a consciousness, truth, that is so full, so perfect in our consciousness, in our mind, love as mind, that it really can heal. So she asks here from the practitioner that he grows himself too, and not only always expect that a patient is growing and makes progress, that therefore we have to see as a practitioner that we always grow in consciousness, that we try to push forward and higher and broader and wider, or else there comes a point very soon where we just get into ruts, where we don't have any more life and mind, the superabundance of being in our consciousness. Ruts don't do anything. The repetition of treatments don't do anything. We should really ourselves grow so that we show forth the Christ consciousness. From the point of view of love, she indicates something very important, just in a few words, namely that the practitioner has to anticipate the fulfillment of his treatment. He has to, so to say, live already at the point of fulfillment. He has to take the end, so to say, for his beginning. He doesn't have to take the beginning as his beginning and hopefully hope that it will fulfill itself. Then we have no more a mentality of love and mind. But if right from the beginning we see and anticipate the result, the beauty of fulfillment, and rejoice in that fulfillment, we have taken the standpoint of love and mind. Yes. Now, let's try and just put into our chart, in that column, a short key term. Yeah? Shall we do that? As short as possible. You know, the shorter our epitomes, the clearer they stand out. And the more it can be, the whole picture can be seen. What shall we, the whole column therefore is love and mind, which we know as what? As perfection, on the top, you see, before we come to the first line, we said love and mind is knowing or the mentality of fulfillment, of perfection. Huh? Love and mind, say, let's say, mentality of perfection. Then we go to and look at it from mind, and perhaps we could see there seeing, perfection, seeing really perfection. Mind sees all, seeing perfection. In spirit we said good and pure. In soul we said that he must be selfless. Selflessness is a mentality of perfection. In principle, win one's own pardon. Winning one's own pardon. Then in life, we have a fullness, a mentality of perfection that is full, that just pours out. Then, in truth, perhaps Well, we can take Christian manhood or Christ consciousness. Let's say Christ consciousness, perhaps. Yeah. Then in love, I would say anticipating fulfillment. Now, in this way we just have a memory support, so to say, and we always must be aware, I can't repeat that often enough, that that epitomes should not be taken verbally, literally. They only always should only give tonality, so that we could word it differently as long as we have the tonality. But all of these would indicate a practitioner's own state of mind. Namely, a state of mind which is in every way perfect. We have again love and mind. Yes. Let's take the second column, namely the truth the practitioner has to know. Naturally, in every case, he has to know another specific truth, but fundamentally, it's always the same, namely that he must have that consciousness of fulfillment or the consciousness of perfection, therefore a consciousness that is filled with the seven synonymous terms. Then he has a consciousness that is actually truth and complete. So we could ask ourselves, what is now that truth, capital T, that the practitioner has to have in mind, so to say, in the mind of Christ, in the divine mind? Well, I think this is rather clear, that if we come to the standpoint of mind and say, now, what should the practitioner know as truth? Well, I think we would say, if he has to know mind, then he must know that mind is all. Or if he doesn't know that mind is all, then he cannot deal with every disease, with every case. He can only deal with every case if he knows that mind is all, that it reaches all cases. So perhaps we will put down there, mind is all, meaning that there is no error. That's where we start. Mind is all, and that's knowing the truth. And right at the beginning, in his treatment, he knows he doesn't have to treat any error as something that has entity. Error is nothing. What would he feel the practitioner would have to know from the point of view of spirit when he wants to see that his treatment should really have an impact? Spirit says, well, I'm the reality of being, I'm the substance of being. Therefore, he has to see that spirit alone, that spirit is reality, that spirit is substance. If he doesn't see that, then he better stops giving a treatment, because it only works on the basis that spirit is substance in this reality, because only he can only reach his patient through the realm of spirit, not through a material realm, not through a mental thought realm. By thought transference, he has to see, because there is a reality called spirit and which is substantial, he really can reach the patient. So we can write here perhaps that spirit is substance and reality. That's what he has to know. Huh? Here he would see that spirit is substance and reality, therefore that matter is not reality, that matter is not substance, that matter is not a healing agent, that matter is not the channel to reach his patient, that matter is not omnipresent, but that spirit is omnipresent. All that we would have to see in the way of spirit. Actually, all these tones which we take now have subtones. Each one has 7 subtones and therefore can be enlarged. But let's just see what is the main truth that the practitioner has to know. What about soul? If we try to see the truth about the patient from the standpoint of soul, what do you think we could really see? I think at that point we would have to see now, is that patient a person, a body? What is he? What is that patient actually? What is the truth about that patient from the point of view of soul? I think we would say, well, the truth about the patient is that he doesn't have a body, that he is absolutely incorporeal, that his true identity is not his body, but that his true identity is free from body, is therefore the identity of soul, based on what? Based on mind being all, and on the substance of spirit, and then you really have the true identity of what we are knowing the truth about. Then we are no more knowing the truth about the body. See, biofeedback would be just the opposite. Biofeedback would just have to know all the various truths about the body, how the body acts, what are the chemical reactions in the body, how are the mechanical reactions in the body. The biofeedback goes out from that very opposite, that you know exactly the medical situation, the physiological situation, would know how the chemical reactions are in the body, and by concentrating on those corporeal things, would try to heal the situation. I think biofeedback is very much in the upcoming and has terrific results, actually, and all on that very point, to know the truth, but not about the incorporeality of man, but about the corporeality of man. So that the one who is treating himself for a disease, to him must be given exact advice what the chemical reactions are, how the nerves function, how the right chemical reaction will be, and things like that. Just the whole information that the medical people and the physiologists would give to him. Then they would have to concentrate on that is going to change the situation. Here it is exactly the opposite. That we see that man is incorporeal, free of anything wrong, and that identity, that spiritual identity which he has, is unchangeable, is untouchable, is definite, is not defected, all that we would have to see. From the point of view of principle, what would we know? What truth would we know? That man is actually an idea of principle, that man is governed by principle. I would see that man is actually the operation of that principle. If I see that, then I'm a really good practitioner, because then I see that I don't have to operate on that patient with my thoughts, that my thoughts should bring about an operation in man, but that man is already the operation of principle. Or principle in operation is my patient. And actually, then I also have a feeling that principle is giving a continual treatment, that the patient is under the practice of principle and not under the practice of the practitioner. Did we say what we want to write in our chart? In soul, we would say the incorporeality. In principle, we said scientific operation, or operation of principle, let's say, scientific operation. Then we come to life. Again, we can ask ourselves, well, what would I know about the patient if I want to know the truth about life and the patient? The patient says something is lacking. The patient says, I'm going to die if you don't help me. The patient will say always something about going down, about the lack he has, the lack of health, dying. So what we would have to do, what the practitioner has to do, is to show that he is at the point of life, of really of sustained by life, that life is something that cannot die, that life is something that cannot disappear or fade away, you see? But that in our consciousness of truth we would see the fullness of life, how life is self-sustained, so that the patient, I would see, is sustained by the fullness of life. That is the very fullness of life. The ever-presence of life, the newness of life, the nowness of life, that is under the stream of life. Shall we put in here fullness of life? In that box, fullness of life. In truth, what would I have to see if I think about, you see, you always had, when you ask what is the truth one has to know, it's always about a patient that has somehow a negative problem to deal with. The negative problem is that he does not know that he's whole, or he wouldn't feel that he's a patient. He has therefore an erroneous consciousness, he has therefore the feeling that he is no more master, that he has no more dominion, that he has a mortal consciousness. And so perhaps we could put here that the truth I have to know is that man knows the truth, that he is aware of the truth, therefore that he has dominion through consciousness. Perhaps we could put here dominion. The sixth day of creation, really, that man has dominion over his body. And he knows it. He's aware of it. He knows what he knows. He's aware of it. He's conscious of his dominion. He has not lost his consciousness of dominion. Then in love, here we have that passage which we have taken last week when we did some exercises on ideas and we have taken penalty. Here it comes in. We saw there that Mrs. Eddy takes about 2 pages to deal with the question of penalty and to show that the patient is never penalized. There is no penalty in the fullness, in the fulfillment of love. So perhaps we put there no penalty, or always fulfilled. Both sides you can put in, then you have a good keynote there. Just always see that the patient is always at the point of fulfillment, of perfection, always, and that they can never be in a situation of being penalized for anything. And therefore, what I have to know is really to see the perfection of man, that perfection has never, that he has never lost perfection, that he has always remained at the point of perfection, and actually does not even have to regain perfection. If I try to see that he will regain perfection, I have started out from a wrong basis, namely that he has lost his perfect state. I better see that he has never lost the perfect state, is always at the point of perfection. Yes. So this is that second part. Let's just run through it again, so to say, in a prayerful way, in contemplating what is shown here. In the first column, you just had first depiction a picture how the practitioner has to work, so to say, always on himself. That we are always our first patient. On our list of patients which we have to treat, on the top is always the same patient. He hangs on. He hangs on through all our life. That's me. That's the first one that has always to get the good treatment. That's the first column, so to say, that we watch also over our mentality, that our mentality does not drop from perfection, and that we see that we work with us, and that we struggle and strive with everything that seems to make us feel that we are not at the point of perfection. Then, when we come to treatment of situations, cases, patients, then that is the second column there, truth and mind. Ye shall know the truth, all right, knowing truth, and that will set us free. What does that mean, you shall know the truth? See, in the Bible, this is a statement, and therefore those who take that statement in earnest say, all right, I'm going to know the truth. And if you say, what do you do if you know the truth? Then, naturally, very often they know the truth about various atomistic truths. Usually it's argumentation, that arguing the case, arguing that the patient is not sick, that God never made him sick, that therefore he cannot be sick, that he does, that he knows that he is not sick, and that sickness is no reality. You just take into your arguments anything that comes along in your consciousness. But when we deal with it scientifically, we see, let's go back to our great pillars of consciousness. Those great pillars of consciousness are the seven synonymous terms, and I better know the truth about those seven synonymous terms, and not so much about arguments. So I don't treat arguments, I treat my ignorance about God. That's the best treatment we can give, to treat our ignorance about the nature and allness of God. And here she shows it and says, you have a very ordered way of doing it. You just go along the synonymous term, and what do you see? To know the truth. You know the truth about mind and see, well, mind is the only medicine of mind. There is only one medicine of mind, therefore mind is all. And therefore that medicine of mind is the all medicine, and that therefore that will be the medicine for all my cases. Actually, you can feel already now, right now, that if we train ourselves and culture ourselves really in that kind of treatment, not in argumentation, but in treating our ignorance about God, that will bring us very soon to the level of divine science, where we are not anymore treating individual cases, where we just treat our ignorance, the world's ignorance about the seven synonymous term, and know in that is everything. If I see that mind is all, I don't have to know that for every one of the patients on my list. I know it for all of them if mind is all. You see? If mind is all, then I've already taken all the patients into my treatment. If I see from the point of view of spirit, that spirit is the only reality, the only substance, that there is no other substance than spirit, well, then I have established in my consciousness the substance and the reality of every patient, not just of one. Or I would have just to repeat that and repeat that like a parrot. But in consciousness, if I have established consciously the fact that actually the spirit, that the spirit is reaching over continent and ocean, and that spirit reaches every part of the whole globe, and it reaches it as the only reality and the only substance, then I don't see how there should be any lack of spirit anywhere. That the spirit moves everywhere. If I try to see what is the truth I have to know regarding to soul, I would see, oh, all these people that have come along and have told me all their problem, They have all corporeal problems. They have all problems of limitation. They don't see the spiritual identity of that problem. But if they would see that their problem is only a deflection of the spiritual identity and that soul only is identity and therefore only identifies itself in a soul-like way, in an incorporeal way, then I have touched everybody. Not only everyone, but all the bodies. The true body of Christ, namely the identity, the spiritual identity of being, which are unchangeable. Oh, I already switched over to the next column. You go to principle, and you see in principle that man is not the person, but the idea of principle, but not the static idea of principle, that man is the very operation of an infinite principle, that he is a calculus. A man is a calculus of ideas. Calculated by what? By whom? By the divine principle, not by the practitioner. And so I feel, oh, I live in a world where the divine principle practices on everybody. Day in, day out. I come to the point of life and I begin to see, oh, all these patients here, well, every one of them said, I'm a patient because I lack something. Or they wouldn't feel to be a patient. They are lacking something. Is that true, that anybody, anything can lack something if there is one life, and that one life is self-supporting itself, self-maintaining itself, that one life is abundant life, is the newness of life, is the nowness of life, the abundance of life, the well of life, the flooding of life, the outpouring of life, then I see there is no lack. It's the inexhaustible well of life. There is no lack. And if I come to truth, I begin to see that man, the patient says, I'm at the mercy of disease, I'm at the mercy of a surrounding, I'm at the mercy of something, I have no more dominion. They do with me what they like to do. The body does with me what he likes to do. The heart and the brain and the nerves do with me what they like to do. I have no more dominion. But if we see that man is not the body, and therefore is in the practice of principle, and this is flooded by life, I begin to see that man as consciousness, what consciousness? God owns consciousness of himself, and accept that as man, that man is God's own image and likeness. Then I begin to see that man, the real man, has always dominion, has never lost dominion. He has dominion with his divine consciousness, and I begin to strengthen in this way man's own dominion and man's own consciousness to see that he has dominion. And when we come to love, I begin to see that man could never have been penalized because mortal mind has done something wrong. That man can never penalize because a mortal law, a material law, has said there is penalty. He's always free.